Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Grey's Academy. You have your two beautiful podcast hosts. My name is Carmen.
My name is Kelsey, and it is a beautiful day for a podcast. And let me tell you, it's actually a rainy-ass day here. I don't know what the weather is there, but it's cold and rainy here. It's not cold. It's just rainy.
It's cold and dry here. But I will tell you, fun fact, my dog shit in the house today.
So, that's so unlike him.
I know. So that made it a poopy day. You know what I mean?
Literally.
Also, we made it through a real intro and we didn't fuck it up.
I know. We really did that. I don't know when the last time that happened was.
And it's daytime. So
it is. Already starting gracious. Off the rails by being normal.
Ooh. This is the crazy is the new normal. Or the normal is the new crazy.
Yes. It's insane that we would be normal.
Anyways, welcome back, everyone. Real quick, I know we've got an email that came in, but I do want to start this episode by reading a brand new 5-star review that we have off of the Apple Podcasts page. And Kelsey, did you ever find out for sure what the deal with 5-star reviews is? Can you only see the ones in your country? Did we ever come to a conclusion?
We did not verify that.
All right. Well, we'll figure it out. But this one here is a 5-star review from Girl Quirl. And this review is from Saturday. Shout out, Girl Quirl. The title is literally so good, ! And all it says with the 5-star review is best podcast I ever heard, ! So,
wow.
Girl Quirl,
high
if you're
praise.
Out there, high praise. If you're out there listening, we appreciate it, Girl Quirl. Shout out to you and all your friends and family.
Truly. We love you all.
Yeah. So we could definitely read, if you give us a 5-star review, we'll read it. We'll read it live.
Yes.
We'll do it live. And you could find the email that Kelsey's about to read at graysacademypod@gmail.com. And you could also reach out to us on Instagram at graysacademypod and then at carmen.gabriel.official at chaotically Kelsey. We reach out and we talk. No spoilers, obviously, but you can also get some hot, stanky Patreon content in the link below. So definitely check that out in the description here and follow us on Patreon. But
pretty please.
Pretty please. Kelsey, to you, my friend.
Okay, so we have a special email we're going to share that came in from a listener in Botswana.
Shout out.
Amazing. So I don't know if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, Carmen had mentioned that Botswana had come into the top 10 of our international listenership, which was like a new country we hadn't seen before. So we had a listener write in to say hello. So this email comes from our friend Sibu. And she says, hey, guys, I was so excited to hear the shout out for Botswana in the top 10. I found the podcast and binged the entire thing and shared with my fellow Grey's fans. I'm a huge Grey's Anatomy fan, like Kelsey, have watched it countless times and was a Derek stan until I heard the very valid toxic traits you guys have pointed out. I'm out here changing lives, people.
Sibu, shout out.
I have loved hearing Carmen's predictions, and it gives some insight on how someone who has never seen the show views it. Love the podcast. And then there's a little thing down here that I don't want to read because it's kind of a not really a spoily. But
if you think it's kind of a spoily, then don't say it.
I'm not going to give the details. All it says is later on in the show, there is a shout out to Botswana, which was another reason that really made her love the show.
Oh, shout out Botswana.
Says thanks so much for the podcast, Sibu. And so then I had emailed her back to ask, first of all, she spelled my name correctly, which I love to see. Most people who email us or reach out do spell my name correctly because my name is spelled weird. And so I love when people take the time to do that correctly. And so we kind of bonded over that because she also has a unique name that she says constantly is misspelled and mispronounced. So we, and I dropped my phone. We had a moment where we understood each other on that, but, reached out to ask her how to pronounce it and if it was okay to shout out. And she said, yes. So that's amazing. So Cebu, thank you so much for listening. And she told lots of her friends to, listen as well, which we love to see.
Oh yeah. And while we're on the topic, it is worth noting that in our last 7 days, Botswana is still in the top 10. Mm-hmm. They currently hold the 1, 2, 3, 4, the number 5 spot. So shout out if you are a friend of Cebu's, you're a friend of the show's, and we appreciate mm-hmm. all of you. And
yes,
also,
I told her it was probably her that got it past the top 10, because if she was streaming and told her friends, then I was like, this is probably you, girl.
Yeah.
You crushed this.
That grassroots movement, we appreciate mm-hmm. you. And also, any friend that spells Kelsey's name right is a friend of mine. So, Cebu, welcome to the Grey's Academy podcast family. We love having you here.
Yeah, so thank you guys. We do. And I told her also when I responded, like, it literally makes our day when we get messages from people on Instagram or emails. It's just really fun. And, like, it's, like, we know there are listeners because we see numbers. But when we actually get to have the interaction and, like, it's putting a person behind these numbers, especially when it's like someone in Botswana, for crying out loud. Like, I'm sitting in Tennessee and I'm talking to someone in Botswana. That's literally incredible. And these are the times we say, thank you, internet. Sometimes you're amazing. And these are those times.
It's true. Also, shout out to our original Patreon subscriber, Alicia. She mm-hmm. had responded to my, my chili cheese dog Instagram story. Mm-hmm. And she was letting me know that there is a place in her hometown that has really great hot dogs. And if we ever make it out there, I don't want to, for privacy reasons, I'm not going to share all of that. But do you just want to say shout out, Alicia? Thanks for talking to us and keeping up with us on Instagram as well. Cebu, feel free to join the club as well. We love it. We love.
Did you say our regular Instagrams or just the podcast one?
I think I said all three of them. Yeah, okay. Yeah. At just in case I didn't, at carmen.gabriel.official, at chaotically Kelsey, and that's Kelsey with a C, and at Grey's Academy Pod. And without further ado,
we will talk about this episode.
Talk about the episode.
Okay, this is the third episode of the fourth season. The 64th episode overall, called Let the Truth Sting, which is a song.
It is a song. Now, I'm going to go ahead and just come clean, guys. I did not listen to this one before the episode. Actually, I haven't even really listened to the song. I listened to the first 5 seconds, and then I skipped to like a minute and a half. So I was going to give some information about this one, but the song Let the Truth Sting by David Gray doesn't seem to have a ton of information out here. But let me just live pull up some info on this here. One of the things that I do is I look at the album that these songs come from. And one of the things that I do is also make sure to touch on the lyrics. So with that being said, the album is called A Century Ends, and it was released in 1993. Let's see if this bad boy did any charting on the interwebs. We also listened to it, and it was we didn't have agreeing opinions. Are you taking a picture of us?
Yeah.
Hi, I look terrible.
It's all right. I took like three while you were talking, and I was like, he will be so mad if I post any of these, so I had to let you know.
Yeah. Well, I should start wearing a hat while I do this recording. Or like do my hair like a normal person. But anyways, okay, so A Century Ends was actually David Gray's debut album, released April 12th, 1993. Now, this particular song was not one of the singles. The singles from this album was Birds Without Wings, Shine, and Wisdom. The doesn't seem there was any charting for these, but it does look like it was it did have a press from Trouser Press. The quote from that specifically is, Gray sings with equal parts sensitivity and vitality, emotional attributes that underscore the Van Morrison qualities of his tenor.
He did the music, because we listened to like the little bit of the beginning, and the music did remind me of Van Morrison.
Yes,
we didn't listen to much of the singing.
Yeah, we did it together. But a couple of the lyrics, I'll go to the chorus. Wow, which one is the chorus? It would have helped if I listened to the song, wouldn't it? This seems to be the chorus. Oh, through the borderline, in front and behind, one pain ending while another begins, lies ruin, disease into wounds like these. Let the truth sing. Yeah. Let the truth sing.
Sting.
That's perfect. Sting. Right. No, sorry. No, it says sing here. There it is. Okay. So there's a different line. Okay.
Oh, okay.
Blind like, circle. Wait, what? Moon and sun body willing, mind undone, one pain ending while another begins, lies, ruin, disease, into wounds like these, let the truth sting. All right.
So also, I want to mention, sorry, this is so off topic. Do you have anything else on the song? I'm so sorry. I just don't want to forget this.
Wait, final thing?
Do you have
thing?
Anything else on the song? Yeah.
Yep, final thing is I would not download this song. It is a, I would rate this song a... med student intern wait what is it med student intern resident fellow attending we have so mm-hmm. few med student and intern ratings on this show it's that true. I almost forgot. I'd give it a two.
Okay, it's a song, it exists.
It's would not download. But David Gray, you have a song that's on iTunes and I'm proud of you.
So okay, I'm so sorry I interrupted that. That was wildly rude. Okay, I just don't want to forget this. So today we're recording. It is Wednesday, January 18th, because for a while we were ahead of ourselves and now we're not. So we're recording this the day before it comes out, which is very on brand for who we are as human beings. But Friday, January 13th was the birthday of both Patrick Dempsey, who plays Derek Shepherd, and our queen, Shonda Rhimes.
Wow.
So I wanted to shout that out. Before I forgot, because I knew that that had been happened since the last episode dropped, but so I wanted to mention it.
Yeah, happy birthday, Patrick and Shonda. Do you think that's why he got cast originally? Is like they were in between two people, but it boiled down to they're both
those Capricorns.
Capricorns.
They love each other.
You know, and that right. You know what they say: birds of a Capricorn fly Capricorn.
That is exactly what they say.
All right, let's do this. This was fun. This is a fun little intro. Also, we are going to have a specific stopping point for some messages from our sponsors today. So when that happens, you'll know, friends.
Yes, hopefully it won't be in the middle of the sentence like it was last week. Sorry, we're still trying to figure out how ads work. We are doing our best.
Okay. Capitalism.
Yeah. Okay. So this episode aired October 11th, 2007. It was written by Mark Wilding and directed by Dan Minahan, both of whom we have seen multiple times before. It has 19.04 million views. And the Netflix synopsis is George's skills dazzle the new interns, and Meredith half-heartedly helps Lexi with her first emergency patient. I don't fully agree with that.
Yeah.
But that's fine. I don't think it's half-heartedly. Like, I think she was fine. I think... it is what it is. Yeah. It was taken poorly because Lexi is the way that she is.
Going through some stuff.
She's processing.
Yeah. Some grief, some anger, some trauma, mm-hmm. some happiness, some flirtatious feelings from Alex. We're going to get into it.
Excuse me.
Podcast burp.
Okay. Recap it up.
So I want you to know that I didn't even make notes of the recap, except we getting really old guy, which we did.
You got
a whole episode of Really Old Guy.
Yeah, that's a good one. Remember when you asked me, you were like, hey, do we ever get to meet Really Old Guy? And I said, yes.
Yes, we do.
It was this episode.
We meet and say farewell to Really Old Guy.
Yes, so I read the blog, and they actually said they enjoyed having him on the show as an actor so much that they thought about keeping him and, like, keeping him as a character for a few more episodes, but they thought it was better storytelling to let him die, because that was, like, the plot.
Yeah, I get that. Also, I wrote my notes a little bit different today, so it's like it's by character. Mm-hmm. And while I was watching, it took a little bit of time to when there was a quote that I wanted to say or like a scene that I wanted to talk about, I was like, oh, do I put this under George or to put it under Izzy or do I put it under Callie or Bailey? So we'll do our best here, but I'm really having a good time. We've actually gotten a lot of really good feedback about this new episodic style. So
yes, shout out Alicia. She said, I liked this. She said it reminded her of like the day after the new episode airs when you're talking about it, like the next day with your friends, which I thought that's good. I like that. I think that's what I want it to sound like.
Yeah. And everything that I do is the day after the episode airs.
Everything.
Everything I do in life.
Okay.
Get this kitchen renovation day after it airs. Actually, I literally just watched this episode. Like, I just finished it. So it's
I watched
very
it yesterday and took notes, and then I had it on upstairs while I was folding laundry before we recorded, just to also be fresh.
Love it.
Okay, so I will go over the recap then on behalf of the group. Okay, so George failed his exam. Really old guy is there. Meredith and Derek are having breakup sex. Burke is gone. Lexi is there being weird about Meredith. George wants to tell Callie and doesn't.
Yeah.
So let's get into it.
Deal.
Who do you want to start with? Do you have someone you want to start with?
I want to start with this Derek Meredith thing.
Okay.
Because this Derek and Meredith section is brought to you by our dear friend Cebu. shout out. So okay, here's my thing. The secrecy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get it. Like it makes no sense. Who cares? She said like they're broken up, they're not broken up. It's I think a little bit arrogant to think that everyone else cares so much about the Derek Meredith thing at this point, like in their friend group, right? It's like, oh my gosh, will they, won't they, who cares? Like it's your fucking life. Go do whatever you want.
Yeah.
No one cares if it's a secret or not. And they clearly are enjoying it because they're seeming, even though they're quote unquote broken up, that they seem actually in a good space.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm happy for that right now. I'm actually happy for them. Why it's a secret, I don't really fully understand.
So, okay. To my understanding, the reading I'm getting is Meredith's keeping it a secret from Christina because she doesn't want like there to be a relationship conversation that puts Christina in an awkward place to talk about Burke, because she feels like, I don't know if she's like, oh, I'm rubbing her nose in it because I have sex and she has emotional damage. Or
right.
If it's more of like I just don't want to have a conversation about her and Burke or me and Derek. And then Derek, I think, is keeping it a secret from Mark because he doesn't want the conversation that happens where Mark is like, why are you doing that? Like, you think that she's going to be fine and want a relationship,
right,
and that's not going to happen.
And we did get a little bit of that later on in the episode.
Yeah.
Which,
and that's what I'm saying. I think that's why he was keeping it a secret, because he didn't want that. And then he was like, well, I'm doing it. So.
Yeah. Speaking of Derek and Mark, I just can't help but root for their friendship.
Mm-hmm.
Although it is a really the dynamic between Derek, Mark, and Weber in this episode is like hilarious.
Yeah, the Mark and Weber stuff is really funny, and I like that we get that, and it kind of comes out of left field, but I'm into it. They're
both
basically bonding over the fact that they're quote unquote old, which I would not say either of them are old, but they're I guess existence of Norman, aka Richard Gilmore, showing up makes them feel like they need to prove that they aren't old.
Yeah.
And they bond over that.
Also, I didn't recognize him until the second scene with him. I knew him, but with the hair and the beard all together, I didn't recognize him right away. But what years did Gilmore Girls run?
It ended in 2008, I believe.
Okay. So this would have been either right when Gilmore Girl, well, we're in 2007.
Hold on, let me verify. Maybe it ended before that.
Really? It ended early?
Yeah, it started in 2000.
Dang. I thought that ran at least into 2011 for some reason.
No. The last episode was 2007. Okay, so I was 1 year off. It ended May 2007, and this aired October 2007.
Okay, so that would have been done by the time he was filming this, probably. Also, shout out, what's his name in real life?
Edward Sherman, and he has since unfortunately passed away.
Right. I was going to say shout out because he was not a part of the Gilmore Girls revival, which was superior to the original Gilmore Girls show. But I know that his presence was not felt other than the picture. And I remember watching that and really feeling that emotion. So shout out. Rest in peace. He really did a good job with this episode. I don't know if he's in more episodes or not, but he did good in this one.
Hold on. Now I feel like that was wrong. Edward Herman. Okay, I'm so sorry. Because I Googled Edward Sherman because I wanted to see when he died, and I was like, this is not the man. So it's Edward Herman. So sorry. He passed away in 2014 at the age of 71. I believe he had a form of cancer, but I could be incorrect. But
is this the only episode we get of Norman, or do we get more Norman?
Spoiler alert, there is more Norman.
Okay, good. So, well, yeah, that's not really a spoiler.
It's really not.
I enjoy that. Yeah. So anyways, that Norman, I have notes about him.
Also on that note, did you ever see the original movie Annie from like the '80s?
No.
Oh, well, he's plays FDR in the movie and he sings cause he can sing. He's precious. I was going to guess
he played Annie. So I'm glad that you had that clarified. Yeah. No, that's awesome. I could see him playing FDR was young. Rest in peace. Nope. Yeah. Shut up, Carmen.
FDR
and JFK mixed up for a second.
They're both dead, so, so you can still say RIP.
What? Oh, JFK? No, JFK was young. FDR died pretty old. Of polio.
Yes. Secret polio.
Secret polio. JFK died of not polio.
No. He did not die of polio.
A polio-shaped bullet to the brain.
Okay, well, that was appropriate. So we'll get back into this episode now.
Are we still in mourning as a nation over that one?
Well, it just doesn't.
It was covered in the Elvis movie. Nope, that was Bobby Kennedy getting
shot. You've got to get it together.
Listen, I've only had one caffeine today. gosh. Anyways, all right. What else do you want to talk about? Where do you want to go next? Because I feel like I need to follow your lead and I need to tackle my notes here.
I would like to start with the Izzy and George bullshit. Because I find it annoying. It's also kind of how the episode kicks off, because Izzy's waiting by the elevator for George to come out. And he comes out and she's like, oh my God, how was it? And then he's like shaking his head like, no. And Callie comes out right behind him, obviously. He did not tell Callie. Right. That was the whole thing the plan was he's going to tell Callie and that didn't happen clearly. And
Go ahead.
What I was going to say is this whole plot point, what stands out to me most is when he is talking to Izzy, we're basically right first thing in the episode when she says when they're in really old guy's room and he's like, oh, I was going to, but she wouldn't let me. Which we saw at the end of last episode when she was like, please just not tonight, whatever. And so what really irks me is he was like, I was going to tell her, but then I wasn't. And I was really mad because I was mad at her. But then I realized like, oh, she helped me through all this stuff. And it was a lot of stuff that she helped me get through. But then I hated her because who marries someone that just buried their dad? And that pissed me off because that's putting blame on Cal. Like she married me after my dad had died. How dare she? Like what?
Yeah.
That makes no sense. Like, take some ownership, have some accountability for your own actions and your inability to process grief.
At all. Like we saw four episodes of George on his bullshit about not being able to process his grief. So that was frustrating, very awkward, but also it's funny because Callie, as she comes off the elevator, her head's in the book. She completely ignores Izzy. Does she even know that Izzy was there? Who knows? You would think that she would have heard her asking George. She wasn't quiet about
it. Even if she did, she didn't want to. So
right. You know. Do you think? Never mind. That was a stupid question because in the last episode, she's having that conversation with Mark about my marriage is over. Am I forgetting her actually outright saying that maybe they cheated? Like she cheated?
Yeah, she says to Mark, I think my husband is having an affair or is cheating on me. She says that in the last episode when she's looking for the missing kid.
That's right. Patient. And that comes after Izzy's like, you're doing a good job.
Yeah.
That was two episodes ago, right?
No, that was last episode.
That was last episode. Okay.
Yeah.
They're all blurring together.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like that George was trying to deflect and make Izzy out to be the villain in his story. That was kind of bullshit. But I get where Izzy's coming from of like, you said you were going to do this, like, do this.
Yeah.
I like that George eventually is like, this is not an us thing. Like, you're not breaking up with Callie. You're not ending a marriage. You're not ending your marriage.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up. That's almost like a redemption for me from this very first scene when he's like blaming her to then at the end when he's like, this is something I'm doing. I'm the one hurting her. I am the one like ending our marriage. I am the one that has to look her in the face and tell her that I did this horrible thing. So you're going to have to back off and let me do it, which I think is fair. And she does need to back off in about a million ways.
Yeah, it's definitely a redemption. The biggest thing to me that I like that George calls out is like, what does he say? He says that he calls her a wonderful person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, at least George knows he's about to do something shitty to someone who is truly wonderful and
who doesn't deserve it. Yeah,
doesn't deserve it. And if there is one thing that we're going to go ahead and blame Callie for, if the worst thing that we could say is that she accepted his proposal, fine. Okay. But that's not, she's not, yeah, she's
a
victim.
If that's the worst thing she's done to you.
Exactly.
That's a pretty good list.
Yeah. She's been very sweet. She's going through a lot of change. Izzy's the villain in all of this, this particular storyline, obviously. Mm-hmm. But,
and also like, if you can say if anyone had any like bad feelings towards Callie, ill will towards her for disliking the relationship between George and Izzy, clearly it was validated.
Yeah.
So you can't even be like, oh, you're being so jealous and irrational because it came to her biggest fear came to fruition. So like, to me, she's just completely so far away from being any in the wrong whatsoever.
Yeah. Callie deserves, and if you are listening to this episode for the first time and this is your introductory episode, listen to the last couple of episodes because we definitely talk about how much we really appreciate Callie as a person, as an actress, or actor, them as an actor. It's really, they've done a really incredible job at building this multi-layer character. Yeah. And Callie has incredible on stage, chemistry with everyone.
Yeah, there's really not anyone that they ever are in a scene with that is not incredibly well done.
Yeah. What about Alex has an interesting kind of up and down arc in this episode.
Yeah, so I don't mind, honestly, the Alex and Norman stuff. And I'm glad you brought this up because I feel like this is something, I don't know if you had a similar experience at Disney, but to me, this is really relatable because like you and I, when we were working at Disney, we're young, we're mid to late 20s, and we had supervisor like management positions. So we had authority over a lot of people who were significantly older than like more than twice our age. And sometimes when you first come into that position, like it can be awkward. Like I never questioned my abilities or like decision-making in any leadership roles, but I felt like that was the place where I got the most pushback. And it's solely based on like, well, you're young and I'm old. So like, you can't tell me what to do. And I'm like, well, you have a job and I am in charge of that job. So,
right.
I do feel like, I never had an issue like telling them what to do. I felt I had more of the issue of them like listening, but the whole concept of him kind of wrestling with like, because I feel like typically in that specific area, like the medical field, new people coming in are going to be younger. Obviously like when we were just in like hospitality, that's a different situation, but so it's probably way more rare to have the situation that he has with Norman. You're just expecting someone who is younger than you fresh out of med school versus someone who is 30, 40 years your senior fresh out of med school.
Right.
So I just found that like interesting and kind of relatable. And I don't know if you had any kind of similar experience where you ever had people like give you pushback because they're like, well, I'm a million and you're two.
Yeah, I did have a little bit when I was at Disney. I was very fortunate that like my first management job I ever had, I was literally the day I graduated high school, and I was 17 or whatever. And I was always in charge of someone older than me to some capacity.
Yeah.
The thing that I hate, and this is, listen, if you're an older person listening to our show, this is not something that is directed towards you. It's the notion that age equates to wisdom. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've always wrestled with because I've seen people our age or now younger that we're in our 30s with more wisdom than us, mm-hmm. more empathy. And I've seen people twice our age who are dickheads.
No empathy. Understand the definition of the word empathy.
No empathy, no wisdom, no common sense. That was a big thing that I saw a lot at Disney is older people with no common sense and younger people who
had been doing the job for like years and somehow still were just garbage at it. I'm like, do you not know what you're doing? You've been doing it since this park opened.
Yeah.
And we just celebrated the 50th. So like, can we just put two and two together, guys?
Longer than our parents were married, even to get us to conception here being conceived. But that's the thing. And then Norman says that he was a pharmacist for 30 years.
Yeah.
And he's
so
like,
he has a medical background. I'm not saying he's devoid of experience. I'm not saying he's stupid. The main issue that we see that Norman has is that he just talks a lot. Like he doesn't seem to understand the urgency in this job, which again speaks to his background in pharmacy. Because like, if you're a pharmacist, how often do you have to do something in like within a 10-minute period, or someone dies? Like probably pretty rarely, or never.
Yeah.
So.
And then he's trying to play to his strengths.
He's just like, he's using it to connect, which I appreciate. And that can be a great skill for a doctor, especially if you're more in like a one-on-one primary care doctor situation, not so much in like a surgery, ER, emergent situation.
Right.
So like, again, if his biggest flaw is that he's talking to people a lot, like, can that be a problem? Yes. But it's, again, it's not like he's just a moron. He just, like Alex says, doesn't know when to shut up. But Alex also hesitates to like confront him about it because he's older and he doesn't want to be mean to him.
Yeah. It's like being mean to my grandpa. Yeah. Shut the fuck up, Alex. I'm mad at you again. So the scene where we get that the kid and the mom, mm-hmm. Hunter, and mm-hmm. they think he's on drugs, and the mom communicates to Norman.
Yes.
And he doesn't nip that in the bud. That to mm-hmm. me, I'm like, you gotta fucking, like, you're an intern.
Yeah.
Alex, for all of his flaws, he's your resident. He's in charge of you. He's responsible for this. That would have been the moment that Norman could have said, hey, I'm taking the back seat here. Right. And he didn't. So from the rest of the episode, and also that was the scene where I recognized him.
To your point, though, I will say that's a good point. I didn't think of that at all, but I think it's because he plays it like he's not taking it. I don't think he recognizes that moment as an opportunity. I think he's truly just like, this poor lady. She just wants someone to tell her what's going on. And I can do that for her. Like, so I don't think it comes from a place where he's like, I can take over the surgical program. I think he's literally just, again, kind of clueless about the communication aspect with the patients of this part of the job. But I definitely didn't think of that. So I'm glad you mentioned that because you're right. That would have been like a yo, this is on him. He's the one in charge. I'm just taking the back seat.
Yeah. When she was like, what about you, Dr. Shale? Well, it's my first day here.
I'm right to
want
a drug test, right? Right, Dr. Shales, I'm right to run a drug test. Well, let me tell you about my drug testing children, because my wife is dead. And I was like, Jesus Christ. You ever have those people? Like, this is why I'm afraid to talk to strangers, because sometimes they just unload like way too much personal information, right? If you're like the cashier at the Publix, and I'm like, how are you? And I'm like, I'm good, how are you? And they're like, well, everyone I know is dead. And I'm like, oh, well, here's money for my sandwich, I guess.
Yeah.
Bye.
Also, fun fact, I'm wearing Pub Sub socks right now.
Incredible.
Yeah. Yeah, so that was definitely something. And then I also saw it later when he was introducing himself to Derek, and he's like, oh, I'm Dr. Shale from UCLA. Like,
yeah,
you should be saying, I'm Dr. Shale. I'm a first day intern.
Well, I graduated from UCLA.
Yes.
But I also actually, I'm glad you brought that up as well, because I like Derek in that scene. I think when he says, oh, welcome to the program, he's just like being really genuine. Like, he doesn't like,
yeah,
he's not like, oh my God, welcome to the pro. Like, it's just like, oh, well, hello, welcome to the program. Like, so cool, good to have you. Obviously, later on, like when Norman runs his mouth, and he's like, okay, that's different. But I just thought that was a nice moment where he was very genuine and being like, oh, cool, like, welcome aboard. Glad to have you.
It's funny because if anyone on the show, I think, is going to be able to look past someone's inequities, it's going to be fucking Derek.
Yeah.
When he's a good doctor. He's not always a good human. He doesn't make good decisions, but he, I think, is the most even keeled. He's not going to prejudge a book by its cover. And I think that was, to your point, a really good scene of how they wrote Derek in that moment.
Yeah.
To kind of bring to the top of mind, hey, everyone, I know that we don't love what's going on with him and Meredith. I know that we're planting the seed that he's going to fully break up with her maybe long term. But in this moment, just remember, Derek's a good doctor.
Yeah. And I feel like the worst version of Derek is Derek in a relationship. Derek on his own is like not that bad. And even Derek as a friend, we've seen some really good moments. So definitely like relationship boyfriend Derek is the worst Derek in my opinion.
Yeah.
But yes, Dr. Derek, pretty great. Friendship Derek for the most part, pretty good. So yeah, I don't know. It's complex. It's like an onion. There are layers. Yeah.
He's the Shrek of this TV show.
definitely, except he's not an ogre. I will say he's not ugly.
No.
He sucks. His personality is a little ugly sometimes.
That's fair.
But it's mainly because he needs therapy.
We also,
as do most of these people.
Who's the next person or storyline that you want to talk about here?
Let's talk about Derek in regards to the Mark and Richard situation. So Mark and Richard are doing this new surgery that they like don't know anything about.
Making history.
Yeah. So they're like, we're not old dogs. We can learn new tricks. The patient is Connie, and she had cancer removed from her tongue, but there's more of it. So they want to get the rest of it removed. And the traditional route of treatment is this flap repair, where they take like a flap of skin from her leg and put it in the place of her tongue, but they don't connect the nerves. So then you just have like this chunk of skin in your mouth that you can't control, which like obviously makes sense as to why they're like, well, no, you could talk, but like no one's going to know what you're saying.
But it will do its minimum function, which is to shovel food down your throat and not
and
let
breathe.
You die.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But my question on that is like, what do you do if you can't speak? Because you can still hear, right? You're not deaf. You can still hear people. So do you just write everything down, do you think? Or do you like learn sign language? But then sign language, unfortunately, is not very well known.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now that becomes less of an issue in this day and age, at least for first world America, because we just would text or we would type things and just share, you know, you bring an iPad,
have your
you.
Phone out. Yeah.
There was, speaking of Disney, there was a cast member that I'd worked with who was deaf, and not everyone would be able to sign. So he could hear, he had the implants, he could hear, but he would type back responses to people on his iPad.
That's cool.
Yeah. So I think
that
would be
a
situation.
Good thing that technology can do for people for sure. Bridge that gap.
Yeah. The sad part about this is like I was trying to envision a world of me not talking. Like
yeah,
that
you and
sounds...
I would definitely have a hard time with that.
Like that's terrible. And also what was she doing that the cancer had led up to that? Because she said 60% of the tongue would need to be removed. That's insane.
Yeah.
And then you gotta think that obviously has a lot of ramifications elsewhere, with your throat, your jaw, quality of life in general.
Yeah.
And I would love to have gotten more backstory on Connie and Weber because they were fun. And also Connie's friends were hilarious. I love them. Yeah. They're great.
Yeah, she really offhand mentions 3 years ago he took out her appendix. But it kind of seems like they really bonded. But that speaks to the level of people like that who really like to talk because they're looking for that connection with like anyone in their life. Right. So when she was there, she clearly reached out and like asked like, oh, you're married. Tell me about your wife. Tell me. So she knows to ask, and she knows Odell by name. She knows to ask about Odell. So I think that speaks to that. And it just reminded me of when you say like you and I obviously would have struggles with that. When Michael had texted the two of us and was like, how do people have podcasts? And we were like, we don't have an issue talking. Like, right. I don't, cause Michael is naturally more of an introvert. So the concept of him like getting on and talking about something for like an hour straight, like blows his mind. But so, and we were like, well, we have a topic, but even if we didn't, we can just go on and on and on for endless amounts of time because we are the kind of people that we are.
And the thing is, it would, even this show is like 32% inside jokes, 20% just fucking making fun of each other. So anything can be filled with time. Everything is content. Also, Connie, do you know where I recognize her from?
Nowhere.
Marvelous Mrs. Maisel.
Oh, I didn't know you watched that. I haven't. Yeah. I really want to. Obviously, I love Amy Sherman-Palladino. That's who did Gilmore.
Well, I was going to say, this episode is clearly sponsored by the Gilmore Girls
Amy
team.
Amy Sherman-Palladino.
Yeah, because you've got Mr. Gilmore, and then you've got the mom from, I forget her name. I forget what the husband's name in Mrs. Maisel.
I haven't watched it.
Oh, it's Maisel, because that's her married name. It's Grandma Maisel. That's the mom. And also the husband in that movie, in that show, Connie's husband in Marvelous Mrs. Maisel was Boss Vic Koth from That Thing You Do. He was like an MC live, and that's where the Wonders play one of their first shows before they get signed by Tom Hanks' character.
Sorry, I'm getting a scam likely.
Oh, yeah.
Let me talk to them real quick. Now, well, since you brought that up, we'll go ahead and take a moment for everyone's favorite segment, Living in Shondaland.
Living in Shondaland! But first,
oh,
a message from our sponsors. And we're back!
Oh, thanks! Okay, so...
oh, that was weird. I said we're. And we are back!
Okay. So we have two Shondaland ladies this episode.
All right. I'm going to guess Connie.
Yes.
And Hunter's mother.
Yes.
Yeah. Good job. Fuck yeah.
There weren't really many other, like, other than the two friends.
I was
going to
guess one of the friends,
yeah,
but I thought that's too easy.
Yeah,
that's
I was surprised. I really thought that one of them would be, but no, it was. So Caroline Aaron is Connie Williams. So that would be the mom for Mrs. Maisel. She was in one episode of Private Practice. And Eve Gordon played Mary Chapman, who's Hunter's mom. And she was in one episode of How to Get Away with Murder and one episode of Scandal.
Okay. Also, for all of you listeners out there, Jessica and I have started Scandal. We have watched the first episode. Shout out to our dear friends, Ryan and Leah. Big fans, big friends of the podcast here. I got to watch the first episode full with them in Pittsburgh this past weekend. I like it. Although I will tell you, they talk fast. And it's watching the subtitles with Jessica and watching them talk fast is like really a challenge because my adult ADHD is just going crazy. But so far I really like the show. I've enjoyed it so far. We're only
we'll be popping up some Scandal content over on Patreon with some more How to Get Away with Murder content as well.
Maybe some Private Practice content.
So we'll keep you guys abreast of that situation, but
abreast.
Yes. Okay. So, so the Weber and Sloan are going to do the surgery. Weber comes to Sloan and he's like, what if we do this surgery that's been done like 12 times in the world? And I don't know if to say dozen or half dozen, regardless, for a medical less procedure, it's a very, very small number. And George is like, why would you do that when you could just do the one you know how to do? And they're like, how dare you?
The crime does not match.
Beautiful, brilliant men. How dare you ask us a question as your teachers? I'm livid. I will fire you. I will throw you down these stairs. We are doing this surgery, George.
And they might as well have just said, George, how's your second fucking intern year, you dumb cock? Like,
truly, it's like the escalation does not match. This is literally a student. And he's not saying, why are you doing this, you old fuckers? He's literally saying, why would you do this surgery that's really new when you know this other one is really successful? And like the response is just an explosion of personal repressed emotions. Like,
that's the best way to describe it. They're very much saying they're looking for a reason to feel old and to just poor George, man, what is it? You can't teach an old dog new tricks. Yeah, is that what you're saying, George?
We're old dogs who can't learn new tricks? No, that's not. I'm just trying to learn about medicine.
Interesting
thing.
That was so funny. That's my favorite part of this episode.
It was really funny. And that's where I think, again, we get the bond between Mark and Richard. And I think that's really funny. So then later on, obviously, they go forward to do the surgery with Connie. In the surgery, it's going really well. You know, everything's going great. And then they just get to a part and they're like, now what? It's not like they know what to do and they can't do it. They literally get there and they're like, what happens now?
So the thing that I didn't understand about that scene is the music was way too ominous. I thought there was going to be a bomb in her mouth, or like, this goes back to that one patient who the blood was toxic. I'm like, what fuck is going to happen? Like, what's the twist? There's no twist. They just didn't know what the next step was.
Yeah.
Call Derek.
The yelling at George was extra unnecessary because it literally proved what they were saying was right.
Gosh, that was kind of wild to me. But I thought, what if she died? What if they kill her?
Yeah, that would be wild. So then Derek comes in, he saves the day, which I will say as a neurosurgeon, it makes sense that he would like have intimate knowledge of the nervous system and how to reconnect nerves and stuff. So it makes sense that that's who they called. And then when they're scrubbing out of the surgery, this is a scene that I really like, you know, they're like celebrating. They're like, go us. We fucking crushed it. We saved her. No cancer. She's going to talk again. It's so good. Like, we are going to be in the medical journals. Like, we're not old. We're young. We're hip. We're youths. And Derek's like, fuck you guys. You had no business doing this surgery. If I had not been here, you guys would have ruined that woman's life, potentially killed her. Like, you had no business even attempting it. How dare you? Like, get your shit together, look in the mirror, like, accept who you are, puts them in their place, and then tells Richard, like, you need to tell Adele that you've been walking around this hospital like a fucking idiot, missing her 100% of the time since she left you, because that's the truth and that's the only thing that's going to work.
And then he says, also, I'm sorry I called you an idiot, and then leaves.
Yes, I did like that moment.
Yeah, calls them cowboys, just goes off on these guys, lays down some good truth.
Yeah.
Good episode for Derek. Actually, I mean, pretty good episode for Mark.
Good
too.
Episode for the truth.
For the truth, right? The truth, yeah. And then, just tears him a new one. And it says, also, by the way, sorry, sir.
And then leaves.
Which is totally, I think, also, you know, you get a good glimpse into Mark and Weber's relationship. Mm-hmm. And then you get a good relationship view into, like, the three of them together. And there's a cool dynamic forming there, which kudos to the writers in the Shondaland war room. Because with Burke gone, there's obviously a big hole in the writing, in the story of how bros relationships isn't the right word.
Yeah, like the male friendship concept.
Yes. Because you did get some insight to what Weber meant to Preston Burke.
Yeah.
And you saw what Preston Burke meant to Derek. And I like that Mark is kind of filling in a little bit of this void.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious now what that's going to look like for filling in the Addison void, too.
Yeah.
Because you're losing two heavy hitters in this show.
Yeah.
In one foul swoop at the same time, which I have to remind myself every like couple of hours, they're not in the show anymore.
Yeah.
I know we're running a little bit low on time here, but I want to talk about a couple of things, specifically the Meredith Christina storyline with Christina just fucking faking it. We could circle back on Bailey and Callie. I want to talk on, and then obviously Lexi and Meredith, but really old guy we haven't talked about really at all. Charlie fucking Yost.
Charlie, really old guy Yost.
Classic.
So they're rounding. He wakes up. It's incredible. Right off the bat, that's basically how we kick off the episode. And I love it. You know, they cast him basically as a body. I was reading in the writer's blog. So when they needed him to wake up, they were like, well, we know this guy's an actor, but like, we don't actually know how great he is, 'cause we didn't audition him to like be a patient. We auditioned him to lay in this bed and occasionally grunt. And so they said they were like so happy with the way he played, and like the back and forth he had with Izzy worked so well. That's why they thought, ooh, maybe we should keep them around for a couple episodes. But they're like, no, it's a better story if he dies in this episode. But I think that's so funny. He did such a great job. And he technically is in Shondaland, but I mentioned it the first episode we met him. I believe he was in an episode of Private Practice. I cannot remember for sure, but he is there. I just didn't want to repeat him because we had done him before. So yeah, Charlie's great. Really wants to die. Love the back and forth with Izzy. Don't love calling her Blondie, but other than that, like, I don't know. So I found it pretty valid for an 82-year-old man.
Yeah. Charlie's only beef that I had was the calling her Blondie all the time. The thing that really, I was very confused at is DNRs are a thing.
Yes, I had the same thought, but so they said he had been there for a year. He had come in from falling, so maybe he hadn't filled out any of that like paperwork previously that kind of stated end of life care. So he had fallen and hadn't woken up. Yes, but maybe it wasn't, the option was not presented yet. I don't know.
Well, if you're a medical professional, this is the perfect time to email at graysacademypod@gmail.com. Because how long after someone wakes up from a coma would you present these kind of information, these pieces to the patient? Because that's what I want to know. I feel like the second he woke up and he was conscious, they should have said, you need to update some information, sir. let's talk about this. Because when he dies, when Izzy was kind of being a dick, like, and then Christina gets the ultimate singer of what, you didn't cut his LVAD wire? So good.
Well, you couldn't find his LVAD wire?
Right.
Oh my God. I was like, that is savage.
So fucking savage. Clearly she has a history of trying to kill people here. But
let's
remember
that has not even been a year since that happened.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. Thank you for bringing that into our scope here. Cause I don't understand time.
Yeah,
on
I don't
show.
Know.
But she's like being a dick. She's unplugging all his shit and she's like mocking him. And he's like, yeah, look, you're still alive. And then all of a sudden he's dead.
And then she's like, oh, I didn't do anything.
It wasn't me. It was this guy.
It's like you were literally doing stuff. So.
Yeah. So I feel like when he was awake or after that time, after he actually did die and they did resuscitate, and he's like, let me fucking die.
Yeah.
You should have presented him the DNR at that point.
Yeah.
That seemed like, and then she's like just mocking him. She's just sitting there like, I'm not gonna let you die, you dumb bitch.
Yeah.
You don't get any fucking lobster either. You're thinking
she does
prison.
Get the lobster.
wait, what's that?
She does get him the lobster.
Did I miss that?
Yeah.
Does he
Did
eat
you
it?
Really miss it?
Yeah.
No, because when she takes it in his room and that's when he's dead.
Oh.
Tyler says he signed out against AMA, and she's like, he can't check out, he can't walk, and I brought him lobster. And then she goes into the room and she's like, I brought your lobster.
I missed
that. And also, help me, George won't leave Callie.
I missed that. So good call out. See, this is one of those details that I miss when I'm watching this episode one time, mm-hmm. basically. So yeah, I liked him a lot. The fact that he was like, hey guys, I was semi-comatose, I heard all your dumb bullshit.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
Truly. Truly so good. Yeah, so I feel like what he brings to the surface for Izzy is just a different perspective, because obviously I feel like if you're in that scenario where you've slept with a married person and then they're telling you like, oh, I'm gonna leave my spouse, I guess you don't really have a reason not to believe them, other than the fact that they're already lying to their spouse. So what makes you think they're not also lying to you? But
also,
again,
what kind
of
relationship is going to succeed when it was built on adultery?
Yeah, it's just one of those things where, like, I don't know. Things happen. People make mistakes. People, obviously, you know, I do think that George and Callie shouldn't be married. I don't think they belong together. And I don't think that just because you're in a marriage, you're obligated to stay in it if it is not making anybody happy. But that does not validate like cheating and hurting the other person.
Exactly. Yeah.
So yeah, it's just kind of one of those things where I'm like, I mean, obviously adultery is wrong. But I'm not going to like blanket outright and say like everyone who's ever committed adultery is a garbage person, because like, again, people make mistakes, whatever, as long as I feel like everything's a learning opportunity. Does it feel at this point that George or Izzy has learned anything? No.
Correct.
Will they? We'll see.
You want to know what he said there that actually cemented it for me as like a whoa moment was what? When he was like, do any of your fucking friends know about this shit?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, damn, she like literally no one knows.
Yeah, she's keeping it a secret. This episode is very like truth heavy, but also very secret heavy.
Yes.
And this is I guess at the end this one comes to light, but this is like the main one that doesn't get told to anyone, because like people find out about Meredith and Derek. People find out about Christina lying. Alex announces the George thing, which we need to talk about that. But like, this is obvious, other than the very last moment, this secret, quote unquote, doesn't really come out in this episode. So, I think
Connie
that is a good
point. Connie gives the truth bomb to all of her friends.
Yeah.
And they give it right back.
Yeah. Your breath is bad. Oh, okay.
Also,
that's
let
like
me
one
respond.
Of my biggest fears though.
Oh yeah.
Like no, I would want someone to tell me if my breath was bad. I am like so afraid that my breath is bad and no one's telling me, even though I brush my teeth.
Like that Ted Lasso episode with the little girl.
Yes.
Oh, it's terrible.
That's so funny. I think you might be dying.
Oh, can't wait for season 3 of that. Yeah. Also, back to the Connie thing. She's like, hey, you should get a new hairdo and you should buy new pants. And they come back and they're like, we hated every single one of your husbands.
Yeah.
Like, oh, guys, these do not line up. They don't match.
Well, I feel like what pissed me off the most is when she's like, your first husband grabbed my ass every chance he got. Tell me when I'm married. That's grounds for a conversation at minimum. If I am bringing someone into your life who is sexually assaulting you on a regular basis, you need to make me aware so that I can address that, because that is unacceptable behavior. That's what pissed me off. I'm like, how long was that going on?
Long time.
And
they've known each other since the 80s.
That like he was doing that. I'm just like, yeah. What the fuck? Like, as a friend, I would be like, also, if someone's significant other was hitting on me, I would be like, hey, your significant other fucking sucks.
We need to talk about this.
Heads up, this guy is fucking other people. So yeah, I don't know. It was wild. Anyway, so yeah, with George and Izzy, adultery is bad, but I do think Charlie basically being the only person outside of the two of them that know this happened offers Izzy new insight, because obviously when you're in it with only that other person, you don't have any other outside advice or anything. So he's like, what I don't love is when he kind of gives in and he's like, I don't know, maybe he's your soulmate and you'll end up happily ever after. I'm like, but don't
you're giving your false hope.
Don't plant that seed. You don't know. Just like, and you don't have to say like, oh, you're both garbage people, but you can kind of just ask questions, be like, here are some things you can think about. Has he told his wife? Have you told any of your friends? Like, what's your long term? You guys all fucking work together. Like, what's the long term plan with that? Like, this isn't a clean break, you know? Yeah,
not even a little bit. Last thing I'll say about Izzy for this episode in particular is I think they did a good job being true to her character at the end of this episode with Izzy, you've known this person for one day. So the right thing to do is give him a memorial and force everyone to talk and say nice things about him, obviously. Yep. And then, you know, she uses her true to Izzy form. She says all of the things at his memorial, but they're aimed at her and George. So,
yeah. It gives me hope.
Yeah. She takes
you
the
died.
Time.
You got what you wanted. And so now I feel hope in my heart. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Gosh. Also, I'm full off that lobster that I brought for you because I wasn't going to let it go to waste.
Damn, that made me want a lobster roll so bad.
Just a whole fucking lobster right now. Let's see.
Oh, I do want to say I like the Charlie quote. If a person wants to do something like die, then they do it. there is a like viral TikTok sound that's going around. That's just like, it says, just a reminder, if he wanted to, he would. And if he wants to, he will. And I know it's like, that is geared at a like male person, but I think that goes to speak for anybody. Like if someone wants to do something, they will do it. And, in that specific sound clip, it's talking about like relationships. Like if a guy wants to text you, he will. If someone wants to reach out to you, they will. Obviously again, not black and white, but it goes, what he's saying holds true. Like, well, if he wanted to tell his wife, he would have told her already. If you talked about it and, you know, and we see both sides. So we see Callie's side and we have the insight of why she didn't want to be told that last episode, 'cause she was having a hard time. But, you know, it's fine. I like that Charlie offers an outside perspective on this. Also, I'm sorry, as someone who's 82, I'm not saying he's committed adultery, but in 82 years, he's probably had some kind of relationship ups and downs that he can speak to.
Yeah. Something. He's been on a roller coaster called a life.
Yeah. And, okay. So let's talk Callie then while we're here.
We could also talk about Callie and Bailey together and their dialogue too.
So Callie is having a hard time.
Yeah.
She is hiding out basically in the residence lounge or office, whatever this is. She's doing paperwork. Bailey keeps going in and kind of like updating her and pushing her to do something about it. First, it's Alex trying to dump Norman in the clinic. Then it's the Meredith Lexi shenanigans. Then it's like, are you going to do your job? And she says, well, why would I come out and do it when you do such a better, soon you're so much better at it. Which she says that and she kind of immediately pulls back and she's like, I don't have any more fight in me. Like I have to just do, this is what I can do. I can do paperwork because I can't come out there and fight with anybody else anymore. Like it's too much. And I really feel for Callie. Like obviously she knows that this other shoe is about to drop. She knows that she's not doing a great job being chief resident. So it's just, she's having a bummer of a time.
The thing that I will say to bring a little bit of my perspective into that is I don't think that Callie was doing a great job as chief resident from the beginning, regardless of before she knew about this whole other shoe dropping with George and Izzy. You know, we think back a couple episodes, she didn't command the respect of the interns, right, of these new residents, which maybe is not as much on her as it is on Bailey didn't pave the way, which I think she apologizes for. She doesn't really apologize, does she? She just kind of talks through it and says, there's a pecking order. I need to follow the pecking order. So we get not true to character, Miranda apologizing without the words, I apologize.
Yeah.
But Weber also has not been doing her he's been doing a disservice to her too. He gave her this out of nowhere with no training,
no
leadership.
I feel that she was set up for success, which we touched on a little bit in the last episode, because we've said that Richard Weber has been a very excellent leader a lot of times in this hospital, and he's
this
just failing
one of
at that for Callie. Yeah.
Yeah.
So she is in a tough spot because she has not been given guidance on like what this role even means. And Bailey has a presence that kind of precedes her, and that's hard to follow. And on top of that, she has her personal life that is in shambles. So
yes,
not
and
in a
those
good place.
Two do personal life and professional life. Unfortunately, do have a correlation, regardless of the old school saying of leave your shit at the door, or
which is hard when your personal life works with you. So
yeah, exactly.
Well, on that, we'll talk on the last scene where George tells her.
Let's do that. Yeah.
Which this was your prediction. I feel like this matched your prediction for the season 3 finale. This is, yeah. I feel like this is what you thought we would get. Like he says it, it cuts to black.
This is the exact in my head. And I like this. This was great. This was, if they would have had a scene after this, I would have thrown the fucking remote. This was perfect.
Yeah.
And she's laying on the bed. She's all packed up. She's got her purse. She's like got her stuff. And she's like, just say it.
Yeah.
Let's do this. And this, I was 3 episodes off. I thought this was going to be how the season 3 finale went. But I didn't. I did expect her to come to the conclusion beforehand. But I thought that it would have been almost very clear. I thought that it would have been like, she knew exactly what was happening instead of the feeling. She has the feeling. She has the thought. She's kind of like perceiving some things, putting the pieces together. But I thought she would have had, someone would have slipped up and known. But I guess you couldn't get that when still none of the friends know. None of the other people know.
Yeah. I'm glad. I liked how they played it as well. She's like, just fucking say, like, she, again, it goes after this episode where she's like, I'm just so tired. Like, I can't fight it anymore. And I think that speaks to this. She's not fighting, finding out about this anymore. She's like, I know it's coming. Just say it. I am sick of waiting. And he just says, I slept with Izzy. And then that's it. That's the end. Which is a bummer.
Very sad. Very sad for Callie.
Let's talk Lexi. Unless, is there anything else you wanted to say on the Callie and George and Bailey and Izzy shenanigans?
I'm going to give a prediction here.
Okay.
I predict that it's not actually going to be easy for them to get a divorce. They're going to get divorced, but I think that we're going to see a version of George where once he says it out loud and he sees how she reacts, which is not going to be good. She's not going to be like, oh, thank God. you know, thank God that my husband cheated on me. I think that George is going to go through like a, he's going to want to apologize. He's going to want to say, I'm sorry. And I think he's going to have a moment where he's like, no, like, let's try to make this work.
And so I don't kind think of like Derek and Addison, where he was like, I'm going to leave her. And then he was like, no, I'm not.
Yeah. I think that's going to happen. But ultimately I don't think that Callie is going to want to stick around for that, which the thing is they have not been married long at all. So like this early in a marriage, it's not like you've got your entire life. You've got kids all intertwined into things and it makes it complicated. It's like, you're still young, call it quits. I think he ended up signing the prenup, or the dad was giving the prenup. So just their lives aren't intertwined that much. Clean break, move on.
Yeah, they own nothing. They live
they
in a hotel.
They own nothing. Yeah, exactly. So I think that they'll eventually do that. I think we'll get Mr. Genovia back in for an episode to be like, George, what the fuck did you do to my daughter? That's my prediction for that. So I'm ready to move on now.
Okay. So Lexi. It's not like a great, this episode isn't great for her, but it's also not, in my opinion, as bad as the first couple episodes, last two episodes. What I definitely don't remember, and I don't know if I just didn't register it the first couple times I watched this, or if I've just like brushed it off as, and like not just not really hung on to it as a plot point, is multiple times she is basically implying that Meredith killed her mom on purpose.
That seems like a new thing to me. That's new.
She says she clearly hated my mother.
Yeah.
Bold assertion. Like, oh my God. Like, that is aggressive.
Yeah.
It's one thing to, when she kind of gets to Meredith and she's like, what kind of doctor are you? And that's coming, I think, probably from a place of frustration. And, you know, whatever. But when she straight up says she clearly hated my mother, I'm like, oh, okay, so now the implication is she killed Susan on purpose, which is wild.
Yeah. What's the end game in your head that you think Meredith was so infatuated with getting her father back? Well, I guess that's fair. Lexi,
or just
really
getting revenge? I don't know.
Or some. Yeah, it's weird. I didn't get that until now. This was the first time in these this season that I think Lexi's bitter towards Meredith specifically about Susan dying.
Yeah. Yeah, because when she said before, like, oh, I have questions, I thought it was just like, oh, like, who are you as a person? Like, let me get to know you.
Exactly.
So it makes more sense that she would have questions about what happened with Susan, especially, okay, if you have, like, the medical background and medical knowledge, and you get this call, like, your mom had hiccups and now she's dead, and you're trying to ask your dad, who is like a bumbling moron, even on his best day,
and now an alcoholic.
Happened. Yeah. Like, you're going to have no closure, no information on anything that happened. So I actually really, really like the scene at the end where Meredith takes the file and is like, I will go over this with you and answer any questions you have. I think that's like a great scene, especially for someone who has this medical knowledge, because it's going to give her so much more of an understanding that everything was done as it should have been done for Susan. And I love also that Meredith opens up and is vulnerable and is like, I was really like, I liked your mom.
Yeah.
You know, I hate our dad, but like, your mom was amazing. And I like that Meredith is vocalizing that, because that's not something she normally does. And we saw her relationship with Susan blossoming, but she didn't really ever voice that bond then either. So it was nice to hear that from her, but it also made it that much sadder. And Lexi Schuyler Lee played that scene so wonderfully. Like, it's just such like, she's really quite silent, and you can like see the pain and like the sadness like building, and she's like about to start crying, but it's just like, it's a very, very, very good scene between the two of them. And it doesn't say like, oh, now they're going to be best friends. It just says like, we're going to get past this obstacle so that we can at least work together.
Yeah. And I like the fact that Bailey was kind of the one who is acknowledging your job is to teach. And in this exact moment, teaching is synonymous with giving this person closure and being a good sister. And all of these interpersonal things. But I think also, to your point, we see the relationship with Meredith and Susan. We see how Meredith starts to feel. But this, I think, is very cathartic for Meredith, because this is the first time she's out loud said, Susan, I was fond of her.
Yeah.
And saying I'm fond of her is the Meredith equivalent of saying, like, I could really have seen myself starting to see her as a mother figure in my life.
Exactly.
Right? And I think that's the emotion we're supposed to be getting in the scene. And the fact that when she's saying, hey, this was what she was admitted with, we did this procedure. And she's like, well, why would you do that? And Meredith was like, we wanted to avoid major surgery. Like,
yeah,
this was outpatient. Mm-hmm. Everything that happened to Susan was 1% after 1% after 1%.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Meredith didn't get defensive. She's like, this was it.
These are the facts.
Yeah. And I think that was really good for both of them. This is a scene, and it doesn't happen often because I don't find Meredith Grey compelling. This is a scene where Ellen Pompeo as an actress really soared. I just really liked this. Was actually, she didn't do a lot in this episode, but something seemed different about the way she acted in this episode, and I really appreciated her overall.
This storyline to me is far more compelling than anything with Derek.
Oh yeah, 100%. I'm actually really like, I'm invested in them as friends and family. So kudos to the Shondaland writers. The thing that I am hoping happens is that Alex and Lexi do not sleep together. I don't want to see that.
Okay.
I'm predicting that they don't.
Do you want Lexi to sleep with anybody?
I don't care about that. I just really don't want that. Alex.
That's like the first time you haven't ever had concerns about who someone was going to sleep with.
It's just, I don't know. Because Alex, before I go on, is there anything else you want to talk about with Lexi and Meredith?
I just want to mention, I like, so when the dead guy comes in from the car crash and she tries to get her to intubate and then later she like freaks out about it. But when Meredith is talking about it with Bailey, I like that she says like, you had us do this same thing. So that's kind of just like slipping in, like, this is common practice. Like it's yes. not, I yes. wasn't actually being a shit doctor or a bad teacher. Like this is something you used to do with us. It's hard on any intern, but when you layer on top of that, the family issue, that's where she's getting upset. So yes. I just wanted to throw that out. I thought that was important to note. But go ahead with your Alex and Lexi prediction or bullshit.
to that point.
Not that you're bullshit, they're bullshit.
Right, right. But I also mind bullshit.
Well, yeah, constantly.
To that point with them, with Meredith and the teaching thing, she was, I think this was the first real time that we see Meredith truly trying to actually embrace the teaching and not shy away from it. And I really appreciate that about her in this scene. In that scene specifically, when it comes to the Alex and Lexi thing, I just don't want Alex to have sex with her. And it's specifically because him being a dick to George in that final scene.
Yes.
Like, Alex, how, like, just because you had this breakthrough and you need to treat Norman as a real intern. Doesn't mean you need to shit on someone who you call your friend.
Yeah, the scene at the end where he outed George made no sense to me. Like, to me, it's not a bad episode for Alex. Like, I mean, he has a learning moment, but he wasn't an asshole in the episode. So it's really confusing to me. Like, there's just no motivation. If something had happened, like, say he had overheard, like, Izzy talking to Charlie about sleeping with George, right? Like, that to me would make sense as motivation for him to then like do something hurtful to George. To me, it is the most unmotivated action he could possibly have. And I read the blog that the writer wrote, and he doesn't touch on it at all. He's like, oh, Alex is just telling the truth because that's like what he does. And I'm like, but it's normally motivated. Like, there's normally a reason for it. And it doesn't really make sense that he just does this thing.
Yeah. Also, can you hear my dog barking in the background?
Just only for 1 second.
Okay. yeah, he's being a dick upstairs right now. Yeah, it didn't feel motivated. And also, just because it's the truth doesn't... There's always a difference between the truth bringing life, and there's mm-hmm. the difference between the truth destroying life. And that was like yeah. a totally tearing down truth moment. So fine, Alex, if that's what you really needed to get your jollies off by bringing down your friend, fine. But that, I think, set Alex back a couple of pieces in my mind.
Yeah, it really made no sense to me character wise for him, because again, we have seen moments where he has been this like, I need to say this truth to a patient or to Izzy or whoever it might be, and it's
throwing
made
Addison under the
sense.
Bus.
But like, yeah, but it just didn't make sense here to me.
Right.
Yeah. There's no establishment leading up to it. Like, if he had been mad after Bailey yelled at him or told him to yell at Norman or whatever, but they didn't play that scene like he was upset either. So it just like really came out of nowhere to me. And that's why I was confused and made me. I mean, there's really not a scenario where I like him doing that. Doesn't matter if he's motivated or not, but like it made me like it even less that there was no motivation.
Yeah. Even him displacing anger would have made mm-hmm. sense, because I think we've seen him do that before where
yes,
he's just a
for
dick
sure.
because he's mad because someone else told him the truth. Yeah. So now he's going to be a dick to someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it made no sense. I didn't like it. And in that exact moment, and it's like George was like, yeah, don't take after me. Don't learn from my example, which is like very multi-layered. right?
Yeah.
Obviously, with the personal stuff going on.
Yeah.
But it just makes no sense. Because even if George is redoing his second year, the stuff that he's doing is still impressive. He's still doing a good job at being an intern. So Alex is just doing his thing, being a dick. But it's a bummer because he kind of has this incredible redemption where he saves this kid. He saves Hunter. He learns from Derek. He does this thing. To me, I saw that as the heart in the elevator redemption story.
Mm-hmm.
He had a chance to do something, save someone's life, not crack under pressure, be on his own, and he did it.
Mm-hmm.
But anyways, that's a lot that I just threw at you. So what, you know, you throw back at me.
Yeah, I was going to say something about George. Oh, what I think is also important to note that basically other than Alex, George still has the respect of all of his superiors. Like they call to him, hey, come over. Hey, you do this, because they know that they can trust him to do a good job, be it, you know, with delivering that baby, be it with running the code and saving someone. There's already a rapport that's built there. And just because he's repeating, I like that it's established that they are all continuing their relationship. They still want him to succeed. Yeah. Like Bailey obviously was upset in the season 3 finale when she's like, did I fail you? You know, she's upset. She puts a blame on herself, but they all still want him to learn and grow and get out of this situation that he's in with the intern and still be a successful doctor. So yeah, he's repeating because he failed his intern exam, but at no point do any of the other doctors, residents, or attendings lead anyone to believe that he was a failure as an intern.
Yeah, and that's a really good point to call back, especially the respect piece, because at the end of this program, he's going to still be there. And I think that George is setting himself up a little bit to be seen even in a higher level, because he succeeded this adversity.
Mm-hmm.
And Alex just low roads everybody.
it's just a really shitty moment for Alex and sucks. Christina, we've not touched on Christina, not a lot in this episode, mostly just comedic. Basically she's like, I'm gonna pretend to be sad to get things from Meredith, and it works. There's not like a lot else going on in it. Last episode was a big one for her, so it's not super surprising that she wouldn't be like loaded on in this episode. I mean, she kind of at the end, they address it. She's like, I'm trying to process it the way that I process it. And, you know, I'm not wanting to talk about it, but I, you know, it is what it is. And then Meredith's like, fine, you owe me a surgery. And she goes, well, you owe me sex details. So, you know, they're okay. But I like when she's like, tells Alex, sad is mine, get your own, pretend emotion.
Yeah. She gets the ultimate Elvad wire zinger, which we love.
Oh, yeah, that was gold.
But I didn't love the her milking the sadness thing. But I do love that Meredith turned. I mean, listen, I didn't love it because it's not something that I would do. Watching it on TV, I loved it because it's hilarious.
Yeah.
But it is funny that Meredith was like, let's just go home and we'll put our PJs on and talk.
And
we'll
cry.
Talk and cry. And then Christina's like, you know. She's like, obviously I fucking know.
Yeah, I also wanted to talk at the beginning when Meredith is telling Derek that she's keeping it a secret, and Derek says, so by being with me you're cheating on Christina, which I think is so funny.
That is funny
and kind of true to their relationship in a way. Like, Derek knows that the Meredith and Christina of it like trumps everything else, basically. And like, that's, again, that's her person. That's, there's really no other way to say that in this show. I feel like the relationship is built on, that's my person, you're my person, I'm your person, whatever. And I love how much they really harp on that relationship and how they really stay true to it at all times.
Yeah.
So yeah, not a lot there other than kind of just like swooping in and being silly and funny. But I love it. And I think that's all the major things other than, I mean, we didn't really talk about Hunter and the gigantic needle in the eyeball moment that I hated.
Yeah.
There's not a lot in this show where I have to turn away from the television. Anything with an eyeball, not doing it. I will absolutely not watch anything go into someone's eyeball.
There was a scene in House where a guy's eye started to swell up and I thought it was going to actually pop.
That.
And if that eyeball would have popped, I'd have been traumatized for the rest of my life. Anytime they do a surgery on the eye and they bring that needle in there, no, done. Fucking kill me.
No, thank you.
But yeah, I'm glad that Hunter, I think, is fine.
Okay. Yeah.
When Alex was like, Norman, get her out of here, dude. Shut up. That was a good scene for Alex, actually. Trying to think. I'm going through the rest of my notes. I did make a note in the recap when they're like, we don't have the same dad. I made a point of saying, yeah, because your dad is chief of staff for the president, Lexi. So I wanted to call that back.
Now you know.
Now I know. Let's see. Any of the notes that I want to point out? You know, Weber missed his date, so that's not a good sign for him and Adele.
Yeah. You said last episode that Adele was going to show up in this episode, and she didn't, but there was a lot of Adele talk, and we kind of get that, like, oh, she's agreed to start rekindling the relationship.
Point for Carmen. So,
well, that's a stretch. You can have a quarter of a point.
I'll take a whole point. let's see. Izzy. Stupid fucking Izzy. George, I don't know. I'm starting to feel bad for George with the position that he's in, but I don't feel bad because he put himself in that position. But also at the end of the day, like, George, if you end up with Izzy, like, she's hot and she's your best friend. So, like, I don't feel terrible if you two do end up together, but they don't. That's all. Oh, there was a scene with Derek where Mark goes, oh, we're old. And he goes, I'm not young. I'm a fetus. And then he said something else. And then Mark said something else.
I'm a genius and a scholar.
Yes. Good scene. I want to call that out before we wrap up here. Those Derek quotes need to be in there. But that's all I got. I just did a quick scan through my notes and I feel good. I feel good with that.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's mainly we got all of it as well. I feel like there was one other thing I wanted to mention. Maybe it'll come to me. Okay, let me ask predictions. So you think that George and Callie are going to not get divorced right away, but they will get divorced eventually.
Yeah, I think we're going to get one or two episodes of turmoil. And it's obviously going to be, I think the next two episodes are going to be very George, Izzy, Callie love triangle based. It's going to end up with them getting divorced, but George and Izzy don't end up together. Maybe they date for a little bit for the next period of the show, but I don't see them ending up together.
Okay. So what do you think? Do you have like a direct, like immediately, like what the next episode is going to look like for George and Callie? Like, do you think they're immediately, you don't think they're immediately going to get divorced? You think they're going to be like,
I think the episode's going to start with them picking up that conversation. It's going to start right with them in the hotel, same clothes. It's going to start with him saying, I slept with Izzy. And then it's going to be the conversation of what's going on. Callie talks about her worst fears coming true, blah, blah, blah. And then they'll eventually be like, okay, well, where do we go from here? So I think the next episode is going to be very emotion heavy. I think there's going to be a big confrontation between Callie and Izzy. I don't know what it's going to look like. Hopefully it's at the hospital and everyone sees, because that'll be fun and dramatic. but that's all I got for them. I don't know exactly what's going to happen, but it's going to be very emotion driven the next couple episodes.
Okay. What about Meredith and Derek?
That I have genuinely no idea right now, because I am more invested in the Meredith and Lexi storyline. So whatever is going on with Meredith and Derek, I don't care, but they're not really broken up as far as I'm concerned. They're still together. So nothing. Okay. Status quo.
What about Meredith and Lexi then?
They're going to have once the George and Callie and Izzy love triangle is solved and is totally resolved. I think they're actually going to have a good moment. And I think this is going to be the start of turning things around. I'm not saying that they're going to have lunch together and they're going to be best friends, but Bailey was establishing that there's no more trading interns. So you're not going to see a ton of Meredith and Lexi being forced into situations they don't want, any future situations, they're going to be choosing to be together, which I think is going to be good for their relationship.
Yeah. So let's see. You said you don't want Lexi to sleep with Alex, but you don't have any predictions of people you think she will sleep with. Chris, anything to say on Christina? Obviously Burke is gone, but anything to add?
I don't know.
You don't have to make a prediction.
No. Yeah. I have no prediction right now. I'm really trying to think. No, I don't really know because we're going to eventually, it's going to come to, I think she's just riding adrenaline right now. And I think the Mama Burke episode really did help get some closure, but I think she's still in this adrenaline phase. And they were making it a point that she hasn't really dealt with it with Meredith. So that's going to happen soon. I just don't know what that's going to look like. And outside of that, I don't really know what Christina's next move is.
Okay. And then what I wanted to mention before, this is not a question. Well, it kind of is. They slip it in. It's like such a passing moment. When Richard comes over to introduce Norman to Alex, he's like, oh, I want you to work with him. He says, are you the new OB guy? Which speaks to Alex liking OB and wanting to be back in on that, because that's his first assumption. So they're kind of laying that groundwork. Like, yes, he misses Addison because Addison was great, but he also enjoyed the work he was doing with Addison. So, you know, it's like a, you know, just a second, but they are laying that groundwork. And I think that's important to note that Alex is, that's where his head is at.
Very interesting. Good catch. I did not think about that.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, you know, Alex, you know, you missed the work, you know, you're all plastics, 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 but here we are. You're looking to deliver those babies again. So, I mean, do you have any prediction on people replacing Burke or replacing Addison, like doctor wise? Or no. When we will get it. Yeah.
I think that we'll have a replacement for both before the end of season four, but maybe I don't think we're going to get no return of Colin Marlowe. we're not going to get that. And then I think. Yeah, because this is the writer's strike short season, correct? This is the nine episodes.
Yeah, this is 17 episodes. 17. So yeah. This was the third, so we've got 14 to go.
Before the end of season four, we will have both of their replacements. But I have no idea what that's going to look like, but I have a feeling we're going to hate them for a little bit. We're going to go through like a Mark period where Mark starts to look like a really good guy, and they're going to have terrible starting point arcs.
Okay. Yeah, anything to say about Mark? What's he got going on? Anything other than being best friends with Richard now?
No, I like it. I like it. I enjoy him right now. He's in a good spot. Also, we need to rate this episode too.
We do. You're right. We do.
Let's rate this episode. I'm going to give this episode a resident 0.49, a 3.49.
Okay, for me, it's a resident. Like, it's just right in the middle. It's an episode of Grey's Anatomy, you know? They're, you know, it's nice. Nobody died. That's a win.
Yep.
Not a whole lot of medical drama. I mean, I guess kind of the Hunter thing. The needle in the eyeball. Not a fan. But yeah, there's not a whole lot of like, oh my God. It's really just about our characters and kind of establishing where they are for the fourth season and kind of where they're going to be going from here, I think. I mentioned this before, but Shonda said that what she was trying to do with the season three finale was basically burn down everything she had built so that season four could be about rebuilding it. And from a completely different perspective. And I think we're just in the middle of that, you know, they're not doing a bad job. It's not a bad episode. It's just like they're building, you know, and part of that, it's just only going to be, not every episode can be a bomb in a person. Cause then it's like, well, that's becomes boring anyways. And so
it loses the wow factor.
Yeah, exactly. So for me, it's an episode of Grey's. It's good. It's not bad at all. The acting is good. The writing is good. It's fine. Other than the Alex doing the completely unmotivated thing at the end, everything feels like the natural progression of where we're at with these people. And so looking forward to seeing how they continue to rebuild and what the show is going to do moving forward.
Yeah, I agree. I think for me, it was a little bit above a three because I actually enjoyed, like, this is the first time I've been, like, intrigued by a Meredith storyline truly. So I'm like, okay, let's see what happens. Let's see where this goes. Mm-hmm. I would have put it maybe above, I would have given it the 0.5 or above, maybe even a 0.6 if Alex didn't just totally douchebag it up in the end for no unprovoked reason.
Yeah, that's the thing for me. Like, there are ways they could have written that where, again, it's still shitty, but it could have been motivated and it could have made more sense that he did it.
Where he's at character arc wise, it didn't make sense. It was very off-putting.
Yes, because, again, he's come so far. This is very like season 1, episode 3, Alex. Yeah. Not season 4, episode 3, Alex. Like, just no sense. So, yeah.
But that's for, it was an episode. It was an episode of Grace, and we enjoyed it. It was good. And I'm curious to see the Norman storyline as they progress. So thank you.
Oh,
I'm
glad. Do you have any predictions about Norman?
No, I'm just right now. I'm just along.
He's
for the
gonna
ride.
Be there.
I'm
just that's the prediction.
I'm just enjoying him right now. I want to see what his storyline looks like. But I like him. Okay. I like him as a character. I also always really liked him in Gilmore Girls from what I saw.
Yeah.
I have not seen every episode of Gilmore Girls, but I really appreciated him and what he brought to the show. So I'm excited to see what he brings to this.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think that's it for us. Again, you can find Patreon link in our bio in Instagram or the show notes for this, as well as our social media handles. You can email us. Again, we love the emails. They make us feel joy in our heart. And you can find that graysacademypod@gmail.com. And we are hoping to work on some more Patreon content. We are tossing around the idea of doing less intense private practice reviews and uploading those on Patreon, just because we probably cannot consistently pump out a private practice and a Grey's full form content every single week. But Carmen also will need to be caught up on private practice when we get to our crossover episodes and stuff. So,
and then Station 19.
Yeah, eventually that's coming in hot. Although I haven't watched that, so I've only watched the crossover episodes and one episode that I thought was a crossover episode and I watched the wrong one.
Well, that'll give both of us a chance to watch this for the first time.
Well, coming in with fresh eyes, that would be a different show completely. But yeah, thank you guys for listening. Please continue to share us with your friends. I hope you're having a lovely Thursday or whatever day of the week you're listening to this. And remember, if you see Carmen wandering down the street,
no spoilies. Don't think about it. Definitely let's exchange information on Instagram. Take a selfie together. Let me know what your favorite episode has been so far. And don't do anything other than that. No spoilers. We don't like it. And we'll see you all in the next one.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.